one modern object with you, what would you choose and why?
A camera to capture the proof and bring back some incredible photos, assuming if I make it back.
Excellent choice, Stuart. Now, Felix, you need this to tie or take the lead. If aliens landed in your backyard and offered you a gadget from their world, what would it be and what would you do?
It'd probably be a universal translator to communicate with any being in the universe and maybe avoid some intergalactic faux pas.
Spot on, Felix. What a thoughtful and innovative answer. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a tie! What a rare and exciting end to today's episode of The Crazy Quiz. I'm your host, Mr. Pickle. In the spirit of fun and fairness, both teams will share today's grand prize, a year's supply of the new Oregaglo. Congratulations to the Interbottoms and the Cocolandes.
This is so much fun. Thank you for having us.
Definitely one of the most, interesting games I've been on.
Thank you both teams for playing with such enthusiasm and creativity. And thank you to our viewers at home for tuning in to watch The Crazy Quiz. Remember, always keep questioning the norm and embrace the bizarre. What the reality is optional and the fun is mandatory.
How come, like, the last line of the script sounds like the tagline for a New Age cult?
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is listener sponsored. What that means is that 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during the last week of our spring membership drive, your support can go even farther. Contribute today at bit.ly/KBOO. That's bit.ly/KBOO. And your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Maximize the impact of your support for KBOO right now and help us reach our $60,000 goal by May 25th. Thanks so much.
KBOO's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KBOO's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now through June. KBOO's board of directors guides the station's strategic plan and represents the interests and visions of all of our members. BIPOC persons are especially encouraged to apply. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/boardrecruiting. Thank you for considering board work at KBOO.
Hi, everyone. This is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. Tune in this Friday, May 24th at 11 a.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland to hear my interview with Katie Bester and Eric Sugarman, recent graduates of the Lewis and Clark Law School. We'll be discussing animal law and the functions of the Animal Legal Defense Fund chapter at Lewis and Clark. Hope you can tune in to That Vegan Show this Friday at 11 a.m. right here on KBOO FM.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Welcome to PDX Progressive Talk Radio, where progressive dialogue meets local action. Every fourth Wednesday of the month, join us for insights and solutions on critical issues impacting Oregon. Let's create change together. We are PDX Progressive Talk Radio.
Good evening, Portland. Thank you for
listening to us tonight. My name is Sherry. If you are listening live, it's May 22nd, the fourth Wednesday of the month, when we air PDX Progressive Talk Radio right here on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland. And we have translators all over the state. You can go to kboo.org and find out where you can listen in. If you're not listening online at kboo.fm/listen live. So we have a very special show for you tonight. Again, my name is Sherry. And before I move forward with what we are working on this evening, again, it's a very special show, and I have tons of thank yous to send out for, I have many guests tonight. I wanted to tell you that we are still in our spring membership drive, and this membership drive actually goes until the 25th. We are working to raise $60,000, and we're not quite there yet, so we need your help. And you will actually donate to a different URL, and I'll get there. Did you know that it is my pleasure to bring you this show every month, and I could not do it without listener support? Support KBOO's membership drive today. Just go to bit.ly/KBOO and hit that donate button, and you know $1, $100. We are having many people help us out. I do not have an updated list, unfortunately, on me, but I do know that we have had consistent donations since April 22nd, and we want to thank everybody. If you have the mobile app, you can go to the KBOO mobile app and hit donate. If you don't like all those two options, you can always text us, KBOO, to 44321. That's KBOO, 44321. And by all means, we take paper. You can mail us a check at KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for helping me get through that. We do really. Actually, your investment in our community radio station really, really helps us so much, and it helps us continually bring you awesome radio programming. I'm sorry, I'm a little scattered tonight. I've been so excited for this. I've been working on this for a long time. We are having what some might consider a debate. Others may consider a forum. For my part, it's my way to help the candidates be seen and heard in spaces where they may not normally be seen and heard, which is on local community radio. I'm not even sure many of these candidates have been out, been able to get out and promote themselves in live venues. So this is a live venue for these guys, and I am wasting too much time. We have 11 candidates with us tonight, and I am going to give each of them 1 minute to give us their elevator speech and why they believe that they can help Portland, revitalize Portland, and bring some real change to the city. If you haven't heard, in response to voter-approved Measure 26-228, the city government is expanding to meet growth demands Portland continues to experience. As we look into the future for Portlanders, we want to see updates for our government. And so here are what's changing based on the Portland.gov website. All voters to rank candidates in order of preference using ranked choice voting. And that's another subject we'll get to later, another day. Establish four geographic districts with three city council members elected to represent each district. So this is a huge opportunity for many of the people who are leaders in our communities. They want to establish a city council that focuses on setting policy and engaging with community, transitioning day-to-day oversight of bureaus to a mayor elected citywide and a professional city administrator. And so this, you, if you've listened to KBOO for any length of time, you know this has been in the works. So here we go. For my people in Zoom, I'm going to start with the first person I see on the list, which is Chad Likens. Chad, could you help us test this by giving us a 1-minute summary of what you hope or who you are and what you plan to do as city councilor?
Absolutely. And thank you for having me on. My name is Chad Likens. I was born in Alabama to two teenage parents. My mom suffered from addiction and mental health issues her whole life. And there were times when we didn't always have a lot to eat in our house. And there were times when it wasn't exactly safe in my house. I'm running for city council because there's a lot of people in Portland that are going through the same kind of things my family's been through. And there's a lot more folks who are just barely hanging on, just like me and my wife were back when we were taking out student loans so that we could buy diapers. I earned my PhD in leadership and policy at Vanderbilt and spent the next part of my career as a researcher and leader, helping educators use scientific evidence to evaluate public policy. My research into out-of-school learning eventually led me to start a small business called Rose City Chess that provides after-school clubs and summer camps. Rose City Chess partners with about 20 schools per year, and a whole bunch of those schools are right here in District 4. We've built a grassroots community full of working families, and together we're campaigning to provide evidence-based answers to the issues that matter most to Portlanders.
That is fabulous. Thank you so much. If you can hold on, we'll have some questions for you shortly. Eli Arnold, you're up next.
All right. Yeah, I'm Eli Arnold. So I've been a police officer downtown for the last 7 years. Before that, I worked as a pilot, and before that, as an intel analyst. And, you know, I've been working in homeless camps, dealing with the fentanyl crisis, the homicide spike, and really just waiting for help from our city government. And I think we've been hamstrung by legislating from ideology. So we need to start developing policy with the end in mind. Local politics is tangible, it's practical, and we need to regain that focus. I want to use my unique firsthand experience with crime, with overdoses, our mental health systems, and our struggles with unsheltered homelessness to make sure the new city council is grounded in reality. We need to deliver policy designed with the end user in mind. We spent years and tremendous amounts of money on emergencies without any real progress. So I think it's time for some radical responsibility, a little bit of courage to do uncomfortable things, and a focus on how our decisions impact Portlanders at the household level. And I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Eli. We're so happy to have you here. Tony Morris, you're up next.
Well, thank you so much. Happy to be here. My name is Tony Morris. I am running for Portland City Council in District 4. I live in the Woodstock neighborhood with my wife and our two kids. I am a lawyer by training. I have not practiced in many years, but I worked for a time as a judicial law clerk at Multnomah County Circuit Court, predominantly in drug treatment court settings. And I'm also a former Portland realtor. I was a real estate professional in town for nearly a decade, and I'm also a person in long-term recovery. I celebrated 7 years in January, and all of last year, I served as the policy director for a nonprofit focused on solving the state's addiction crisis. The more that I did that work, the more that I realized that City Hall here in Portland needs a recovery champion if we're going to get our arms around the city's addiction crisis and help the city become the best version of itself. So I'm proud to be running a union-backed campaign focused on putting recovery into action and standing up for working families.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you, Tony. Bob Weinstein, you're up, sir.
Bob?
Yep. Hi. I'm Bob Weinstein. I'm running for city council to help begin fixing problems that affect our quality of life, such as public safety, homelessness, transportation, neighborhood livability, and sensible spending and tax policies. With a new government being elected in 2024, voters have an opportunity to set a new direction. As a former school superintendent and four-term mayor, I have the experience and leadership skills to help make that happen. I've worked with people from all walks of life and backgrounds to tackle and solve complex challenges. I know how to build consensus and get things done. Portland has a very active and engaged civic life, including small business, artists, neighborhood associations, and community organizations. We need to strengthen the partnership between city government, business, and people throughout our neighborhoods. Portland has faced challenges before with success, and we can do it again.
That is fabulous. Thank you, sir. Lisa Freeman.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lisa Freeman. I am running for city council in District 4. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me. I live in Multnomah Village with my partner and our two kids. I am a government transition and community safety specialist, and I have 15 years of public service, both internationally and locally. I started my public service as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Kyrgyz Republic, and then I went on to work for the Office of Transition Initiatives with the U.S. Agency for International Development for over a decade, helping governments and communities navigate government transitions in places like Afghanistan, Syria, and Nigeria. And for the last 2.5 years, I've worked for the City of Portland in the Community Safety Division to launch innovative approaches to reducing gun violence and to improve our first responder system. I am running because I am incredibly excited about our new form of government, and I want to bring my government transition experience to bear on this moment to help deliver what residents asked for when they voted for charter reform.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for being here. Sarah Silky?
Yes, thank you.
Hi,
thanks for having me on. I'm so excited to be here. So my name's Sarah Silky. I grew up in Portland, the oldest of 6 kids. When I was little, I spent a lot of time with my parents selling stained glass jewelry boxes at the Portland Saturday Market under the Burnside Bridge. I learned the meaning of responsibility at a young age. It was a little safer back then, but like Chad, I still experienced the instability of poverty. Now I'm in a much more stable place and able to give back to my community. I'm a working mom raising 3 kids, an environmental engineer protecting our drinking water, and a union steward supporting our workers. I'm running for city council because while I enjoy engineering, I have learned that it's not the technical fix that's missing most of the time. It's the political leadership, the courage to stand up and admit that what we're doing isn't working. We've got to do better. I've worked for the city for 12 years now and seen firsthand how the proclamations and policies are implemented or not, depending on the budget that goes with them. So I want to bring my engineering perspective and systems thinking to address community safety, government accountability and transparency, and fighting global warming. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Moses Ross, you're up.
Good evening, everyone. Moses Ross is my name. I am a 30-year resident of this beautiful city that we live in, Portland. I live in Multnomah Village, and for 8 years now, I've been the chair of the Multnomah Neighborhood Association. And so I've had a firsthand, boot-on-the-ground look at the challenges of our city and how they have been directly affecting us out here in the neighborhoods. And so I want to my plan is to revitalize this beautiful city through smart economic policies, but also with a strong emphasis on livability by emphasizing listening and learning from our residents. Right now, they feel completely disrespected by our current leadership, and we've got to do something about that and give them the respect that they are due. So I'm really looking forward to being of service to the city of Portland. And thank you for putting this forum on, Sherry.
Thank you, Moses. Mitch Green, you're up.
All right, thanks for having me on. My name is Mitch Green. I live in the West Portland Park neighborhood near Jackson Middle School. I'm an Army veteran, a first-generation college student who went on to earn a PhD in economics. I have over a decade of experience working as an energy economist for the public sector, while also teaching the next generation of students how to be economists along the way. I'm running to give voters in District 4 a strong progressive voice, one that advances an unapologetic trickle-up economic program for Portland. We are at a critical juncture in the history of our city, and I think it's important to stand up for our values while pushing forward new policies that make our city a place where everyone can thrive. City Council needs an economist for the working class who knows how to cut through narratives that claim we can't afford to make the investments that address our crises head on. And check out my website at mitch4portland.com. Thanks.
Thank you, Mitch. Jeremy, you're up.
Hello. My name is Jeremy Beausoleil-Smith. I'm a downtown renter, husband, parent, and project manager at Portland State University in the Little Projects and Construction Department. I'm also someone that lives with bipolar disorder. Today, I have the stability I knew I always could, but it is because I'm the beneficiary of resources, care, and treatment. I believe anyone given the resources I've been given would be in my same exact spot. I'm in this race to build out the most robust social safety net in our nation while still being a good steward of the taxpayer dollar. I come from a long line of extreme couponers and frugal people. It's what I'm good at, and I'd love to bring those talents to Portland, and I think we need someone on council who has a background in sustainable infrastructure and also that lived experience of what it's like to be at that rock bottom and to get their brain back and reintegrate into society. You can check me out at jeremy4pdx.com. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And you were mostly all on time. That's awesome. So that helps us move forward. So the way this will work is I have three questions that I'll be asking you. One I shortened just for time's sake. Each of you will have 30 seconds to answer this question, and it will be much like what we did just now with your introductions. So is everybody okay with that mostly? You can put up your hands, or I'm just going to assume that you're okay with it because that's the best way I could figure out to do it. Yep. Okay. Thank you, Chad. You're first. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. We're good. So on homelessness is the first way, is the first question that I wanted to address because it's the most significant crisis everybody sees every day. Portland has been grappling with a significant homeless crisis. What specific policy initiatives would you propose or support to provide immediate relief for those experiencing homelessness? I'm sorry, Chad.
Thank you. My complete housing strategy is posted at lichensforportland.com. But for now, let me just mention a couple things. The first is the importance of stabilizing those who are at risk of losing housing. If we invested even a modest amount in legal defense for tenants, we would save many times that amount that we end up spending on homeless services. And that would allow us to better spend our resources. For people that are experiencing homelessness, I reject the idea that we should frog march every homeless person and their tent into a parking lot and surround it with barbed wire. We need high quality shelters that offer privacy, safety, and services that help people get back on their feet. We know how dangerous it is to live in a tent, but some of our congregate shelters that we currently have are even less safe and less sanitary. We also know that pod villages and motel shelters are 3 to 4 times more effective at moving people to permanent housing than congregate shelters. The research is very clear. Mm-hmm. Give people a room with a door and you give them a chance for dignity.
Thank you, Chad. Eli?
Yeah, so this is kind of near and dear to me because I deal with it every day. I've seen people go from homeless into housing. I've seen them fall out again, and I have found them after they have passed away. So I think we have to end free-for-all camping. By creating designated camping spots, we can minimize the harm and we can register them to homeless people. We can end the anonymity of homelessness, get them on the Built for Zero list, start tracking, why are you homeless? What's driving your struggle? And that's gonna allow us to direct our resources more effectively. By providing triage-level stabilization, we can move quickly while county stands up their longer-term supports. So really, I just We got to be fast. We got to be predictable and have stabilizing options.
Thank you.
And in the chaos.
Thank you. Bob, you're up next.
Thank you again. Homelessness remains a huge concern for everyone. Short term, we need more shelters with wraparound services, including treatment for those with drug addiction and or mental health problems. Long term, we need more affordable housing, better coordination between the city and the county, and we need to implement best practices, including a coordinated access system like Houston's to streamline the process for accessing housing and support services, and a built for zero approach using real-time data to identify and house those with the greatest needs.
Thank you. Tony.
Well, first we have to talk about the need to expand our affordable housing inventory. You can't get to affordable housing with housing abundance. So we need to remove barriers for creating more housing options long-term. Short-term, we need to do more to increase shelter and shelter alternative options for folks who need immediate help now. And we need to focus specifically on creating more recovery housing options for folks who are struggling with homelessness and substance use disorder.
Thank you, Tony. Lisa?
Yeah, I don't think there's any dispute that the answer to houselessness is housing. And in terms of immediate relief, what that means and what many people have already mentioned is shelter options. And if you talk to 10 people who are experiencing houselessness right now, you'll get 10 different stories, which means we need many different shelter options to accommodate people with many different needs, including treatment, including a place they can take their pets, they can take their belongings, they can take their families. And we need qualified outreach workers to be able to reach out to people who are in that situation and guide them to the services that are available. I think safe rest villages have been really successful, and more models like that are what we need.
Thank you, Lisa. Sarah?
Yeah, so I don't know if this, I think we need to look really hard at canceling the funding to the Joint Office of Homelessness and not sign on to the new HRAP or this Homelessness Response Action Plan until the county comes up with a truly actionable plan with specific deliverables that will address the approximately 10,000 unhoused people that we have in the area. The proposed HRAP isn't going to do that. In the meantime, the city can help out with this list of people so that people can be treated as individuals on a case-by-case basis. And I also think the city can pilot immediate conversion of office space to temporary transitional single-room occupancy housing. Like Chad said, you need a door in order to have privacy for humane housing.
Thank you, Sarah. Mitch.
Yeah, look, I'll just state it plainly. The market-led approach to housing has failed us. We need to put the public sector in the driver's seat and start making some bold moves using the full suite of our fiscal and regulatory tools. So in the short run, this looks like the city purchasing its surplus hotel capacity and using it to directly shelter people living outside. And in the longer term, I like social housing paired with zoning reform and a renter's rights package. We can afford to house everyone, but it's going to require that the public sector takes the lead.
Fantastic. Moses.
This is a challenge because not only are we dealing with the folks that are houseless right now, we are also dealing with the impact of it on the neighborhoods and the livability of the issues that are arising from that. So we've got two things, short term and long term. In the short term, we have to provide more safe rest villages. It's a proven model. The PSU study here recently shows that it works. Second, we need to expand our safe parking programs so that folks that do have cars as an asset in their lives have a place to park safely and without minimal impact into the neighborhoods. C, we need to make sure that we build up our internal resources within the city to help support those folks. For instance, social
Moses, enterprise. I got to cut you off, man. I'm sorry.
30 seconds. Got to be quick. Okay.
Jeremy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I reject this notion that we're going to build our way out of the houselessness crisis. We need to be working with the state legislature to overturn the ban on local rent control so Portland can actually institute something that will work for our city, as well as working with the county to create a front door to the healthcare system where we can triage people on a case-by-case basis. Like Lisa said, when you met one person that's houseless, you met one person. They have their own individual traumas and it has to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate all of your answers. You have all thought about this long and hard, and it sounds like many of you have talked to a lot of people. The next question we are going to tackle is about mental health. Access to mental health services remains a critical issue in Portland, particularly among the homeless population, as many of you have alluded to. How do you plan to enhance the availability and quality of mental health services in Portland? And I'm just going to leave the question at that. Let's start with Chad.
We have to build a continuum of care from sobering and detox to stabilization, treatment, and recovery. And we also need to believe the experts who say that we need overdose prevention sites and greater access to medication for opioid use disorders. And yet, while all that's true, the greatest investment on greatest return on investment is to give people a room with a door. Every single day that you are without a home, it just piles trauma on top of trauma, and there's no amount of therapy or medication that can replace the basic requirement of having permanent housing. So the ultimate answer is to create high-quality shelters and deeply affordable housing and put a stop to the cycle of trauma that has caused the skyrocketing demand for mental health services.
Thank you, Chad. I need to move on to Eli.
Yeah, so, you know, I've personally worked with all the parts of our public mental health response, from Project Respond to Portland Street Response. Just this week, I sent a woman on emergency health hold, so I know really well that our system is broken. We have to continue to support programs like PPB's Enhanced Crisis Intervention Team. We've got to improve Portland Street Response, support Project Respond, and we need to push hard on the state to actually create some civil commitment beds at the state hospital. You know, 100 new beds, filling those would be a tremendous benefit for the people who were placed there, and a real benefit to the community they're coming from. So homelessness and mental health have a strong overlap, and, you know, Built for Zero is, again, a critical part of identifying those needs and directing services with some continuity to the people who need them.
Thank you, Eli. Bob, you're up.
Thanks again. I would prioritize funding and support for community mental health clinics, counseling services, and crisis intervention teams. I would also advocate for better integration of mental health services with other vital community support systems like housing, addiction treatment, job training, and more. Specific strategies could include co-locating mental health professionals in affordable housing complexes, homeless shelters, and other sites, as well as partnerships with employers to increase job opportunities and supportive services for those recovering from mental health issues.
Thank you, Bob. And your last name is Weinstein?
Weinstein.
Weinstein. Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Tony Morris, you're up.
We have an addiction crisis in Portland because we have a fragmented, siloed system where the left hand and the right hand don't know what the other is doing. We need to create a coordinated office of addiction response that blends together elements of the city, state, county, behavioral health providers, payers, members of the recovery community. And it's essential that we do this so that we're prepared for House Bill 4002, which is the reformation of Measure 110 that's coming online in September. Police will be able to make direct referral through deflection programs to treatment in lieu of jail. And we need to make sure that all moving parts of our system are working together. And this is a great opportunity to show that we can perform locally and go to the state legislature and ask for funds to scale our activities and deliver improved outcomes.
Thank you, Tony. Lisa Freeman.
Yeah, I agree with Chad that the best mental health service we can provide people is housing. I also agree with Eli that we need to enhance and make sure that we can respond when people are in a mental health crisis. And that means making sure that Portland Street Response is fully funded and available 24/7. We could also follow the lead of cities like Denver, who have established centralized walk-in and drop-off service centers with wraparound services for sobering and detox, mental health, housing, to get people connected to the services they need when they need them and when they're ready for them.
Thank you, Lisa. Sarah, Silky, you're up.
Thank you. You know, this is another thing where there's different parts of the government that are supposed to do different things, and mental health is very clearly the county's responsibility. It's not even a gray area. The Oregon state statutes designate the counties as the local mental health authorities. That said, when you see people in crisis, you're going to help them. The city has already started to compensate with Portland Street Response, and I support funding it to operate 24/7 so that people can get care whenever or be addressed whenever. Like with housing, you've got to integrate all of the services. You need a comprehensive plan. You need that list of people, and you need the plan that identifies existing resources and needs, and then this is gap analysis and fills them.
Thank you. I appreciate your thorough answer. Mitch, you're up.
Yeah, so my first priority is to secure a budget that allows Portland Street Response to scale to full capacity, where it can operate 24/7 and deploy its team to train professionals to interface with those experiencing mental health crises on the street. Renee Gonzalez's attempt to defund PSR not only undermined the program, but it resulted in a loss of federal funds that would have offset its costs. So focusing on fully funding PSR as soon as possible is just good return on investment for the city while we work to build the administrative capacity to provide complete mental health services.
Thank you, Mitch. Moses.
Well, I think we need to do a couple of things. We need to increase funding in our resources at the city level to make sure that we have enough money to be able to pay for some of these plans that we're talking about. Second of all, we need to fully fund Portland Street Response. It's a proven model of getting out there and identifying the right people and getting them into the right services. Third, we have to improve access to crisis services. In other words, like what Bob was saying, having 24/7 locations where they have the wraparound services available to them. And then last but not least, we have to integrate mental health into primary care a lot stronger so that people have the resource available to be able to get the services that they need.
Thank you, Moses. Jeremy.
We need to be coordinating with the county to create sobering centers. We need to be compensating healthcare workers fairly and helping them negotiate fair contracts in coordination with the unions. We need to be fully funding Portland Street Response, and we need police accountability and oversight to protect those experiencing mental health crises.
Thank you, Jeremy. You guys are doing amazing. Okay, we have one last question for you this evening. Revitalizing Portland. As I make my rounds during the day, I need to be talking to you guys about the potholes and the street conditions, but for this, we are doing Revitalizing Portland's Economy and Urban Environment. It's essential to the city's future. What measures would you implement to stimulate economic recovery and development, support small businesses, and attract new investments while ensuring that these efforts are equitable and inclusive for all residents? That's a huge one. Do your best. We'll start with Chad.
Zoning reform that allows more folks to live closer to their jobs and to the people and places they love is a really great start. But I also want to mention the importance of supporting small businesses. They are what drives tourism. They're what drives the livability of our favorite neighborhoods. They're what bring people out of their homes and gets eyes on the streets, which helps public safety. But right now, the basic economics of retail and office space in Portland are totally busted, and it's hurting small businesses the most. Vacancies are going up at the exact same time that rents are going up. The city needs to offer incentives for landlords to help small businesses fill all those empty ground floor spaces, which creates both the impression and also the reality of a vibrant city economy.
Fabulous. Thank you, Chad. Eli.
Yeah, I think our recovery is going to be built on getting back to basics. So improved livability, responsible maintenance, more effective responses to crime, and an end to unsheltered homelessness. We also need to be good partners to businesses and housing developers. I think when we do these things, our reputation will improve. We'll stop seeing this vicious news cycle about this city. You know, public safety, livability, and a good economic environment benefit everybody, and they're going to be the foundation for further progress.
Fabulous. Thank you, Eli. Let's see. Next up, we have Bob.
Hello again. Downtown revitalization is critical both for District 4 and the entire city. I support tax increment financing districts to fund improvements, as well as incentives to repurpose or replace vacant buildings, including making street-level space available to artists. I support the newly created small business office. Attracting new corporate investment and high-paying jobs must also be a priority. I support strategies to actively court companies in growing fields like green technology and digital services, like Daimler's recently announced $40 million electric truck engineering facility. It's good for people, it's good for large business, it's good for small business, and it's good for Portland.
Thank you, Bob. Tony Morris.
Well, we have to support the kind of incentives that will stimulate economic activity, including things like expanding the business license tax downtown credit or downtown tax credit. We need to look at our tax structure globally and figure out what's working and what needs to be tuned up. So that means we need to form a tax group that will look at what we need to do to create those incentives and strengthen Portland's economic competitiveness. And we need to prioritize public safety to increase foot traffic, to grow visits to local businesses, and create a environment downtown where folks feel comfortable being out and visiting these local businesses that make Portland the great place that it is.
Thank you, Tony. Wow. Lisa, you're up. Lisa Freeman.
Yeah, so as a community safety and government transition specialist, I think revitalizing Portland at its heart is about giving people confidence and hope. You can't invest in something unless you have hope for the future. And so that starts with building safe communities that are led by stable, participatory, and accountable governments. Beyond that, the basis of a strong economy is the ability to make a living wage, the ability to access affordable housing, and the ability for small businesses to access affordable rents, which has been mentioned by several other folks. So policies to get us toward that end are where we need to go.
Thank you, Lisa. Sarah, you're up.
Yeah, this is my favorite one. I think we need to focus on what Portland does well, being a fun place to live that prioritizes the environment and our beautiful green spaces. You know, remote work and the decline of office space is a new reality, and we need to get ahead of that curve and make it work for us. So I think we need to re-envision downtown, taking into account the new realities of remote work and people's desire to not have to commute, and do this in a holistic way with as many people so we get buy-in. And then I think we can start a green bank to leverage private capital and make that new vision a reality.
Thank you, Sarah. Mitch, you're up.
Yeah, I think the first step is rejecting the false narrative that our downtown is flagging because Portlanders dream too big, have even bigger hearts, and love to tax us to death. You know, the truth is, the plain economic truth is that the rent is too damn high. Despite oversupply conditions in downtown commercial real estate, we see those landlords raising their asking rents by double digits. The city should buy these properties at a discount and redevelop them for mixed income social housing. And that's how you adjust to a new post-pandemic norm and you fire up a new economic engine for downtown.
Thank you. Moses, you're up.
You know, my whole campaign is based off of the revitalization of the of our beautiful city, and especially on the downtown core. I feel like we have lost a sense of pride in our city. And I feel that we reestablish it by doing some of the basics, picking up the trash, cleaning up the graffiti, a concerted effort to bring it back to a foundational point where people feel safe going back downtown. People don't feel safe going downtown, period. We have to change that perception. It comes about by us reestablishing a sense of pride, and it starts by picking up the trash and cleaning up the graffiti, and then we can start to think big. Major League Baseball in downtown Portland or at the Lloyd Center would be an amazing economic driver.
Thank you, Moses. Jeremy, you're up.
Revitalization starts with rejecting the corporations that leech off of our city. They're not job creators, they are job losers. We need to be creating a market environment that centers our people's ideas, paving the way for new small businesses and co-ops. And furthermore, what increases safety in our city is not more police. It's creating a city that cares for our most vulnerable Portlanders. That is what is going to revitalize this city. Thank you.
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you. I want to say thank you to all of you. You have all given detailed, specific, clear answers. Can you raise your hands and let me know if you're open to taking phone calls? I actually got through this faster. I had it all scheduled out and it went faster than what I thought it might. So some of you are up for taking phone calls. Awesome. So KBOO community, if you would like to call in and ask our District 4 candidates questions, I would love to have you do that at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And so while we're waiting, if you guys can hold on just a moment, and how do you raise your hand? We're going to have, thank you, Bob. We're going to have people call in at 503-231-8187. Maybe you and I can take a conversation offline and I'll show you how to do that. In the meantime, we are talking about the Portland City Council's District 4 candidates for the new Portland City Council governance that was passed by voters in 2022. And I want to thank everybody for joining us here on this Zoom. We are doing this. This is technology today. We were trying to figure out a way to make this happen, and it ultimately came up that our candidates are dialing in via Zoom, and you in our community here in Portland are listening to their ideas via a Zoom call. And all of them have decided that they are willing to take phone calls. So if you have questions and you're in Portland, the phone number is 503-231-8187. We have Chad Likens. We have, I'm just naming you guys off here. So Chad Likens, Eli, I had you here a minute ago, Eli Arnold, Moses Ross, Jeremy, I'm not going to slaughter your last name. It's Bushadelli. Jeremy, can you unmute and tell me your last name?
Yeah, Jeremy Beausoleil Smith.
Jeremy Beausoleil. So can I say Jeremy Smith? Or is it a double last
name? Whatever works. Yeah, okay. Middle name is Beausoleil.
Beausoleil. Okay, I'll have to practice that. So, and then we have Sarah Silkey, Tony Morris, Bob White. Weinstein, I'm gonna be horrible on that name. Let me see, Mitch Green. We have Lisa Freeman, a ton of fabulous. 231-8187. 503-231-8187 is the phone number to call in and ask our candidates questions. In the meantime, I need to give a promo here for the official spring drive here at KBOO. I am only able to do this because of our members. Our members donate funding to KBOO to help us stay on the air. And we are working on the phone lines, apparently. So in the interim, we are working to raise $60,000, and you can help us by going to bit.ly/KBOO. Again, that's bit bit.ly/KBOO. The phones may be having an issue. No? Okay. If you are using the app, click on the donate button on the KBOO app. And if you would like to text your donation, do that by texting KBOO to 44321. And if all that text stuff is just a little too much and you just don't want that in your life, you like paper, well, we love paper. I like the way it sounds when you're crinkling it up. Anyway, KBOO, you can send a check to us at KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And I want to give a special thank you to all of the candidates here for helping me out with this. You guys are my test crew. You are my incubator. Oh, we got a phone call. And we will have that up in just one moment. Our board op is Zach, and he's fabulous. He's a very patient person. He's worked really hard to help me make this happen. And it looks like we have somebody on. Hello, caller. Do you have a question?
Yeah, my name is Andy Munson. I'm a fifth-generation Portland area resident. And my question was, with fentanyl seeming to be the driver of the problems in our streets, what's the plan to mitigate the dealers that are putting that fentanyl into?
Oh, I lost him. So it sounds like... Hello, you're there?
Yeah, okay, yeah, I got you.
We lost you for a minute. So you have a question about how they're going to deal with a plan for fentanyl dealers?
Yeah, just the fentanyl dealers that are poisoning our citizens. It seems like, you know, it's been a very frustrating experience to watch the dealers go through the revolving door of the criminal justice system and be back out on the streets. So I'm curious, how is each candidate going to address that?
Let's leave that as our last question. I think that's a great question. So we want to start with Chad.
Sure. And way to go for an easy question. I appreciate that.
Awesome.
So I think that being strategic for law enforcement and how we patrol and choose to look for dealers is important. I know that Eli is going to have something to say about this. I've always thought it was crazy that the bike patrol decided to clock out at the exact same time that the people started to deal fentanyl. That's recently changed. They're going to be able to expand the bike patrol some, and that should help, I believe. The other thing is we've got to really think about switching people to safer supply, and that's where the overdose prevention centers come in. If we can work on the demand side and give people access to medication for opioid use disorders, if that were even a fraction as easy to access as it is to access fentanyl, we could make some progress.
So next up is Eli.
All right, I swear I didn't feed this. But yeah, there's a lot of parts to this. So, you know, obviously we need to deal with the demand side, right? We need better access to treatment. It's terrible to watch a person's brain be hijacked by a chemical. But on the dealer side, we have to be good partners with the DA's office. We need the DA, and, okay, and we as the city need to raise our hand and ask the state to look at some things, specifically how we release fentanyl dealers. We treat it like it's not a violent crime, but they absolutely know they're killing people. And we need to really use proactive policing. It's been somewhat effective downtown. We need to expand that sort of proactive sort of going after these people because they are very dangerous people.
Okay, thank you. I'm caller, we need to move on to the next one. I'm sorry, candidates. This is the first time we've taken calls for this, so I'm going to go move on to the next question. Hello, caller.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. We're getting a ton of calls. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, my question is, I recently discovered that the energy, particularly fossil fuel industry, has been 100% in bed with the real estate and construction industry for probably 100 years or more. And I think that explains why I've been seeing and hearing from people in apartment buildings that they are unlivable in the summer without air conditioning. So I think we can do a lot better in terms of insulation. And
do you have a question? I'm sorry.
Yeah, my question. So I want to hear some of the candidates' takes on that, and if they're aware of this as being an issue.
So Tony has his hand up for this one. Tony, you want to go?
Sure. So if I'm understanding the question, it's how do we address the need for things like air conditioning in apartments or rental homes to offset the hot weather that we are experiencing on a more frequent basis in the summertime? And I think that that is an issue that requires deployment of resources strategically to help folks who are most vulnerable to things like heat domes. And we have funds available through PSAF, for example, that we can use to make sure that habitable units are upgraded with climate control to keep people safe during heat events.
Thank you so much, Tony. And let's do Sarah, and then we are going to close out. I'm sorry for people who are calling in. We are running up against the end of the hour.
Yeah, well, thank you for that question. So, global climate change obviously is making temperatures hotter in the summer. And it used to be that in Portland, you didn't need to have air conditioning. It was a rarity. Now it is something, when you've got 116 degrees, there's not too many places around here that are built to accommodate that. I think using PSAF funds for heat pumps and then putting into city code and hopefully the state code buildings that are designed to deal with heat and cold extremes in an energy efficient way is what we need to do.
Thank you, Sarah. Let's go to Jeremy, and I think that'll probably be it.
Yeah, definitely honing in on our most vulnerable people. That would be, people with kids, elderly folks, and getting them the resources that they need as far as, AC units in apartment complexes that don't have that. But at a more 10,000 foot level, fossil fuel companies are not good neighbors to us. Chevron, Zenith, they are actively polluting our river, our air, our soil. Why would you maintain a neighbor that is doing these things to you? You would kick them out of your city. You would kick them out of your neighborhood association and so forth. So I really want voters to be thinking about that, and that's on the table. We do not have to just sit here and let these companies pollute our earth and pollute our city and take advantage of us.
Really appreciate all of you. Please, I will send an email out to you for feedback on how this went and what I could do to what we can do to improve. All of you are fabulous. I want our voters in District 4 to go to your voter pamphlet. Is the voter pamphlet for you out already, or are we waiting closer to November? No, the voter pamphlet is not out yet. Okay, so we have Chad Likens, we have Eli Arnold, Lisa Freeman, Moses Ross, Sarah Silke, Tony Morris, Mitch Green, Jeremy Smith, and Bob Weinstein and Chad Likens. So keep those names. Yes, thank you, Sarah. Keep those names rolling through your head and reach out to these wonderful people. You can go to portland.gov and look up the candidates there under elections, I believe. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate you. I'm going to end this now. Have a wonderful night, and I look forward to talking with you all again soon. Thank you. Bye, you guys.
tuned in to listener-supported community radio.
Is listener sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during the last week of our spring membership drive, your support can go even further.